Blog Talk Radio. Listening to the Words on Flick show on eWater Radio, KEWRDB. Happy New Year 2019. Welcome to the first edition of the Words on Flick show with me, your host, Janine Coveney, of the New Year 2019. Wow. Hey, how are your holidays? I really enjoyed my break, but I always enjoy an extended holiday. Anytime I get a chance to chill and spend time with family and friends and eat good food and raise a glass or two, I'm pretty happy. And in fact, like culturally, I feel like we're still in the holidays, even though Christmas is long past and, you know, the first of the year was earlier this week, because just culturally, you know, the 12 days of Christmas aren't over till January 6th. And that's when, you know, those of us in the Latin culture celebrate the Day of the Three Kings, or some people call it Epiphany. So, you know, I'm going to keep partying and eating my holiday food and my black eyed peas and stuff till then. But I wanted to reconnect with you and do our show because there's a lot to talk about. There's a lot to talk about. I have a great guest this evening, but before we get to him, I just wanted to spend a couple of minutes reflecting on the year that was 2018 in film. And, you know, my last show before the end of the year, I talked a little bit about my favorite films of 2018. And I also posted it in a blog post. But, you know, it's always hard to pick a top 10 favorite because either, you know, you can't decide which ones were your favorites, or like me, I didn't get to see everything that was available. You know, it's really hard to get into the theater and see everything that you want to see and to be able to make some really informed decisions. But, of course, you can pick the best of what you've seen during the year. And the other thing is, you know, it's all subjective. It's all, art is subjective. So the things that I thought were good, maybe some other people didn't think were good, or vice versa. So, you know, you don't want to argue with people because, hey, your choice is your choice, what you like. If you're into horror films, if you're into thrillers, if you're into the superhero genre, if you really like teen flicks, you know, that's not my bag. So, but the really nice thing about 2018 I found, and a lot of people were juiced about it, is that it was a really strong year for African-Americans in film, African-American creators, you know, writers, directors, and of course, actors. So there were a lot of new voices and new perspectives. And while there've always been films targeted to the quote unquote urban market, you know, 2018 was the first year in a long time where I felt like it seemed like almost every other month there was like a big event film for people of color. Like, you have to see this film, and this is going to be a big film, and this is going to be a big event. So that was kind of nice and interesting. Okay, so of course, you know, the major one was Black Panther with director Ryan Coogler and starring just about, you know, every African-American talent from the newbies to stalwarts like Forest Whitaker and Angela Bassett. And then Ava DuVernay, who's been coming up for quite a while, She took on the film adaptation of a beloved children's book, with A Wrinkle in Time. And there was Sorry to Bother You, which is, it didn't make my top 10 list, but boy, was that fascinating. I mean, I like to see stuff that I've never seen before. And that is on that list of, you know, brand new, original, unique. Blindspotting, of course, I really liked. It was on my top 10. Then you had Spike Lee's Black Klansman, The Hate U Give, directed by George Tillman, and then Barry Jenkins adapted If Beale Street Could Talk, which it still hurts me that I haven't been able to see it yet. Still not here in my market. Hey, bring it on down. I think it's coming by the end of the month. But then you also had Crazy Rich Asians, which is a major breakthrough for Asian actors, and it was directed by John Chu, and it was really charming and cute. I enjoyed it. The Equalizer 2, directed by Antoine Fuqua. Then you had Creed 2, directed by Stephen Caple Jr. Of course, there was Widows, which was totally carried by Viola Davis. A lot of stuff, a lot of stuff. I mean, I'm not even talking about the comedies and, you know, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which had a, you know, Afro-Latino as a main character. So it was great. It was a good year. And then, of course, Black Panther made $1.3 billion worldwide. That's a lot of money. And it's funny because stories have been, you know, touting Letitia Wright, who starred as Shuri, as the top earning actor of 2018 because she appeared in Black Panther and she also appeared in other major movies. But she's like, that money's not in my pocket, which is funny. So that figure is she was in the top earning movies of the year, ticket sales. It remains to see if she'll be the top earning actor, you know, personally. But anyway, it was a good year. It was a great year in film. So, and now we're on to 2019. So I'm looking forward to once again to going to the theater, my favorite place. But now I get to introduce my guest of the evening. So this should be a fun talk. My special guest this evening is Mr. Billy Johnson, who's a former senior editor for Yahoo Music for 18 years. He's been covering hip-hop, R&B, and pop music since 1991 and has interviewed the likes of Beyonce, Janet Jackson, Quincy Jones, Kanye West, Eminem, and Mary J. Blige. He has interviewed people I haven't interviewed at all. I just dropped something. Oh, well. So Billy's been on the scene for a while. So he's also been featured in Vibe, Entertainment Weekly, The Hollywood Reporter, The Source, Upscale, and more. So he's really a prolific kind of a writer. And he's also been like the go-to music expert that a lot of the networks call when they need somebody to give a great perspective on hip-hop and R&B issues and news. He's been on pretty much every channel, every network. So he's based in Los Angeles, and he has twins, boy and girl twins, with his lovely wife, Ebony. So on the personal tip, the reason why I know this is Billy and I first worked together many moons ago when I joined Yahoo, when it was the parent of Launch Radio Networks. So he's just one of the most knowledgeable, the nicest people I've had the privilege to work with in this crazy world of urban music. So I'm happy to welcome to the show, for my first show of 2019, Mr. Billy Johnson Jr. Billy, are you there? Hello? Uh-oh. What's going on? Okay, let's see what's going on here, because I'm not hearing him. Huh. Interesting. What happens if I do this? I don't want to hang up on him. Billy, are you there? Okay, if you can hear me, call back, because for some reason, this isn't really working. Let's see. Let me do this. And let's do that. See what happens. Because Billy is an important guest, and we don't want to not have him on. Okay, so Billy, call back. Call me back. So I don't know what happened. I don't know why he didn't come on. Yep. All right. So what Billy and I were going to talk about is our interest in movies. And, you know, he was basically telling me that, you know, like many of us, it's hard to get to the movies. And when you have kids, you know, you got to go see what they see. You got to go see what they see. So a lot of times you wind up seeing stuff that's, let's see, who is this? Let's see if this is him. Hold on. Hang on. Hello, who's there?
This is Billy Johnson Jr. Yay.
Oh, my goodness. Hi, Billy. I'm so glad you're on.
Yeah, what's up?
No, I
Here
had another
go.
Caller, and I thought it was
okay.
You. And unfortunately, I put them on the air, and they didn't speak. And
no.
I really should have double checked the call that you know the phone number you were calling. But it's all good. Hopefully, they'll call back.
Okay.
I'm glad Sorry you're here. That. Yeah.
Yes. So, I'm here. Excited to be here.
Yes, well, I'm glad you're here, too. How are your holidays?
Well, I feel like the holidays are still going.
Me too.
I don't think they're
Me
over
too.
Yet. The tree is still up. My kids refuse. They still have Christmas gifts under the tree. they need to take them and put them in their room, et cetera. But it was really nice. It was chill. Christmas was chill. My mother-in-law came to our house. As opposed to us going to her house. And then for New Year's, it was a big cousin celebration, which was, you know, kind of like our tradition. So that was cool. So it was very nice. How about yours?
It was good. As I was saying kind of at the top of the show, it was chill like yours. It was really kind of low-key, you know, totally family. And as I was explaining, you know, in a lot of cultures, we, the Christmas season doesn't end until January 6th because that's the actual end of the 12 days of Christmas. And when a lot of cultures celebrate Day of the Three Kings, Dia de los Reyes, or, you know, Epiphany or whatever. So it's still going on, dude. We're still Christmasing over here. So
that is funny. I never knew when the 12 days of Christmas actually started. I just assumed it was the 12 days leading up to Christmas. So yeah, I've just been educated.
Yeah, it's 12 days after Christmas, according to some cultures. But anyway, you mentioned your kids, and I know they're like teens, tweens at this point.
Yeah, they're 16. I have twins, a boy and a girl. They don't like me posting about them on social media, posting their pictures, or even talking about them. I work from home.
Okay, so we
hoping,
won't talk about
you know,
them.
we'll see if they're eavesdropping, but I talk about them anyway. My heart. They're amazing kids. We have, of course, regular teenage stuff we deal with, but I, you know, I'm really blessed to have great kids, and my wife, Ebony, is. She's incredible. She really is a great, great mother, and high standards and values and stuff like that. So they feel the pressure, but you know, we're trying to prepare them, you know. But
absolutely, you have to prepare
really
them. It's so nice to hear you talk about, you know, your wife and your kids that way. And, you know, our culture sometimes, even though this culture is all about nurturing kids and trying to keep them from harm, and you hear about helicopter parents and stuff like that, but sometimes the media doesn't always protect them, you know, and they get exposed to a lot of stuff. And I know that a lot of times when you do make it to the movies, you're seeing what they want to see. So can you talk a little bit about the movies that you've seen with them this year?
Yeah. So just to comment quickly on one thing you said, you referenced helicopter parents. And so, hi, my name is Billy. I'm raising my right hand. I am a helicopter parent. I've been working on it, because my mom was a helicopter parent, my dad wasn't, and I kind of like something in between. I'm not really sure where the dust is settling for me, but but I feel like the world is crazier today, and they need to be prepared, but just cautious, at all times. But in terms of going to the movies, it mostly is a family outing. I mean, my wife and I really don't even get that many date nights, and so when we go to the movies, it's usually a family affair, and so we try to see something age appropriate. I mean, I guess with a million cable channels and Netflix and all these things, I mean, Ebony and I watch other stuff that may not be appropriate for the kids, at home. But yeah, but for the most part, like, we ask them, what do you guys want to see, and kind of go from there. So I was kind of lucky this year, because there's one particular movie that I really wanted to see, and I didn't know if the kids were going to want to see it or not, but they did want to see it, and that was the movie A Quiet Place. So I was kind of excited that they wanted to see the same thing, and it turned out to be a pretty good movie, because I'm a fan of John Krasinski. I mean, it's weird. Like, I'm not a movie buff. I know we didn't talk about it yet, but our, you and I know each other from our careers as music journalists, and so the music side has been, really different. Like, trying to listen to every piece of music and analyzing it and everything. And even though I'm always in, that analytical mode with everything, but in terms of movies, I've decidedly chosen to just enjoy a movie, and not, and not treat it the same way that I treat music. And so really just get in the moment and just enjoy it for that. And so that's kind of like my experience. But I did want to see this A Quiet Place movie. And it's funny, because I know with the talk of the Bird Box movie, there are some similarities, between the movies, in that you have these families or groups of, small groups of people that are, like, kind of thrust in these different scenarios. They're fending for their lives and stuff like that, and trying to figure out how to navigate, these creatures. And there's actually, I haven't finished watching Bird Box yet, but there's this scene. Hey, do we care about spoiling movie plots and stuff like that, or
I think most
on the
people have
show?
seen Bird Box, and if they haven't,
Okay,
they're not listening to us. So go ahead and spoil.
Right. Okay. I mean, not a big spoiler, but just talking specific details. But there's a scene that they have in Bird Box that they also have in A Quiet Place, and it's like, they're in these Armageddon states where the city shut down. They're avoiding crazy people and stuff like that, and so they go and there's a supermarket scene where, they get into a supermarket, in both of the movies, and it's just sort of like the climax fantasy moment, like, yes, because we're trying to figure out how we're going to eat and so forth. And so we get, into the store, we can kind of go in there and splurge and stuff like that. So I think it's kind of funny. But I thought I did enjoy, I know I ramble crazily, but I really did, like the suspense and the storyline of Quiet Place. And I just thought it was a concept I never considered, before. Like, because in every scary movie, it's like you're trying to hide from the creature, like, whenever the creature is around, you're trying to be quiet so they don't find you. And so the fact that this whole movie was just based on that, it was pretty, it was just a different, it's a different concept, down to them being barefoot. And of course, in every movie, there are all these aspects of it that don't really make sense. Like, okay, well, how is this really plausible? Because, like, the wife is pregnant in A Quiet Place. Like, how is she going to deliver the baby without attracting the monster and stuff like that? But anyhow, I definitely enjoyed that. And I think as a whole, I think everyone in my house enjoyed it. So that was cool. Because we sometimes, depending on the movie, we'll end up having that conversation about the movie on the way home in the car and stuff like that. So, I definitely like the movie experience. Just, I guess, arts in general. My family ends up talking about all this stuff, whether it's music we like in common or movies and things like that. So it's like a good way for us to communicate.
That's awesome. And you know what? I didn't see the Quiet Place movie, but when I saw the information about Bird Box and the previews, it reminded me of A Quiet Place because, I did know that the premise was don't let the monsters hear you. And in Bird Box, you know, don't look at the monsters because then something bad will happen. So I could see that there were some similarities there. But also to your point, like, with families, it is so important to communicate and to talk about what you've seen and what you've experienced together, because I think that sharpens particularly the kids' critical thinking skills and their analytical skills. And what's most frustrating to me, because you said you don't apply the same analytical intensity to film, like you just go and enjoy it as you do to music. But I apply that same critical eye to everything, and it's really a problem because I apply that critical eye to my personal relationships sometimes, and that's not always good. But it's so frustrating to me to experience, you know, a piece of art, theater, music, a movie. Like, I started going to opera not that long ago, which I really enjoy. And then people are just like, you know, what did you think of it? What did you think of the performance? Did you like that, you know, that song? What did you think of this plot point? And they're just like, you know, that's okay. I liked it. I didn't like it. It's like, you know.
That is hilarious.
Like, I don't want to talk about it, but, you know, that's just me. So, what can I say?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, if some conversation comes up, maybe I am going to be pretty analytical at that point. But but in the movies, I'm like, man, just enjoy it, because the pressure. I always feel like there's a lot of pressure, especially with the music, to just to totally be on top of it, especially if it's like one of the things that's kind of like a topic that everyone's talking about and wanting to feel informed and, you know, being able to have, you know, a really detailed conversation about it. I just associate pressure to it. And because there's so much music coming out at all times, I mean, it's so weird, because I've been for so long had been, you know, like working at a media outlet and just, you know, producing content every day, and really not being able to turn it off. And the last couple of years, you know, been doing a little more PR and still some writing. And it's interesting. Like, I miss writing as much as I was writing, but I think, you know, after 20 something years, I really did need a little break to kind of do something different for at least some period of time. So it's all very interesting. I understand that.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons why I kind of turned my attention to doing this, to doing Words on Flicks, which is the name of my blog, and this podcast, because even though there is pressure to keep up with movies that come out, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't see this movie, I didn't write that review, but I'm doing it from a fan perspective, and it's totally different than the pressure that you and I both felt to stay on top of, you know, who's releasing new music, who's touring, and then all the personal stuff that we had, you know, the gossip kind of stuff that we had to stay on top of, the relationships, the producers, who's having a baby, who had a fight in the parking lot, like, you know, who shot who, you know, all of the stuff that we have to every day. And it's a 24-hour news cycle, and there is pressure to stay on top of all of that. And to some degree, I still feel that, but I'm, you know, I've fallen off a little bit because I'm writing about a lot of different kinds of things now. But I want to come back to Bird Box.
Okay.
Let me ask you this. Like, did you get swept up in the Black Panther phenomenon? Because, you know, 2018 was that big year for all these movies. And I think I ended up seeing Black Panther like 5 times, which some people would be like, oh, that's nothing. I saw it 10. But for me, I'm like, how did I wind up in the thing? Because, you know, I kept going with other people who wanted to see it. And I don't regret it, because it was a fascinating, involving, delightful, well done movie. So tell me you saw it.
Yes, I definitely saw that, and I was caught up in the hype. I only saw it once. I did think I was going to see it more than once, but I mean, of course, you know, I will see it. It will be one of those movies that you know, like Coming to America or something that I will watch every time it comes on cable
Yeah.
or whatever. Yeah, it was definitely big for us, and I definitely was all, I'm not a comic book person, and to be honest, I know this sounds terrible, but I can't tell you if it's a DC movie or a Marvel movie and that kind of stuff, but, you know, I just kind of get caught up in the hype of whether or not it's a storyline that I'm interested in and that kind of thing, but yeah, I was definitely very excited to see this movie. I thought it was great with the ensemble cast, and it just looked like it was, you know, well done, and a comic book movie with all these superheroes and stuff. And we're involved in a lot of different organizations. I mean, my son is the Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity Incorporated has a mentor program that he's in, and so they were going to see it as a group outing, and then we're in Jack and Jill, and Jack and Jill was going to see it as a group outing, and then I think some of their friends were going to go see it, but we went to go see it with Jack and Jill, and it was like the, you know, most of our chapter went out and invited friends, and so we, you know, we had a good percentage of the theater that we went to see it. And then someone in the chapter knew someone, knew the young actor who played Killmonger, and so he came and signed autographs before, so it was a lot of hoopla associated with the experience, and, you know, just really enjoyed it. And actually, my favorite aspect of the movie were the female warriors. I thought it was really great, you know, just to see these black female warriors, and I thought they looked great. I thought they were tough, you know, badass.
Yeah, the Dora Milaje.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out the correct way to pronounce it. Yeah, I looked that up. So it means adored ones, I believe. You know, they were just that. Yeah, I saw Time. I guess a week after the movie had come out, Time magazine did a story just kind of giving a little history on them, which I thought was pretty cool. But I really enjoyed it. And back to my kids, you know, they definitely wanted to see the movie, but I ended up having this discussion with my daughter that went on for about a week. And it was basically like, you know, well, whose ideology did I support, you know, Killmonger or T'Challa? And from the perspective of like, well, you know, should they have gone outside of Wakanda and helped other people, and or just kept that information contained? And I just thought it was a pretty interesting conversation to have with my child, who was then 15 at the time. And actually, my kids say, you know, it's really interesting because my daughter in particular, like, she has a couple YouTube channels, influencers that she follows, and so some of the news that she's discussing, you know, is kind of prompted by these other discussions that she had. So like, she will and this was one of those scenarios where she had seen some of the discussion going on online, and honestly, I don't think you know, there was much discussion with the peer groups at school, but I think some of the things that she had saw online, you know, prompted, you know, just her to want to talk about it more. And so we just kept, you know, having this conversation for about a week. And I, if I remember correctly, I think she was kind of feeling like, well, you know, she really wasn't feeling, I mean, of course, Killmonger, you know, he killed people and stuff, which was terrible. But, you know, I think she kind of, you know, she kind of had some sympathy for him. And I thought that was, you know, I thought that was cool. And I think when you think about where we are in the world and Black Lives Matter and, you know, Trump and all these different things going on now, you know, it is completely different than what it was like for me when I was a kid, a teenager in the 80s. So I think, you know, they have a different, you know, they have a lot of other things to consider. So, you know, I was kind of, you know, I really enjoyed, you know, that we could have those kind of conversations, and I didn't bring it up, that she brought it up. I thought that was very cool.
That is cool, and that is one of the part of the brilliance of the movie, in that it wasn't just about this you know, this superhero in a fictional African kingdom. It was a lot about our social, cultural, and political realities and our issues in terms of being Africans you know, forcibly brought to America and left here and separated from our African roots. And so, you know, that's who Killmonger represented. He was abandoned by his parents and left to fend for himself in Oakland. And so his perspective on what Wakanda should be was completely different. So that's fascinating that debate, was brought up by your child. So that is very, very, very cool.
I thought it was really, really cool. And I'm glad you made the other point too about, you know, this, and most of these superhero movies that I see, I mean, of course, you know, it's like good versus evil, and there's, you know, there's some type of social element, usually because of whatever the you know, superheroes are fighting for. I mean, even if it's the aliens coming to attack the world and they want to protect the people and that kind of thing. But I do agree with you that it was different, you know, the social, you know, the social relevance of it. And to be honest, I mean, I feel like that as a person of color and as a journalist, I always felt that way, like even covering music and its entertainment. But I always remembered in every piece I wrote, depending on what way I went, you know, I was thinking about the social responsibility that was coming along with whatever I was writing, you know, because I know, we do feel the pressure, you know, as people of color in it. And a lot of people do look at the media coverage and how people of color are covered in the media, and they use that to formulate opinions and so forth. So I did relate to them taking that, you know, to incorporating that kind of element into Black Panther. And another thing that I really liked about it is that I feel like a lot of times, and I think a lot of people still like have this mindset, like they expect all people of color, you know, Black people, to specifically talk about this race, to have the same opinion. You know, like everyone's on the same side of the fence. And, you know, I think, you know, I mean, I know we're going to talk about R. Kelly, you know, that could be one issue. Like everyone, you know, because when the O.J. Simpson trial was happening, I remember people thinking every Black person thinks O.J.'s innocent. And then R. Kelly, you know, I know there's some of that, had been some of that divide. Although, you know, I think recently it's very, very different. So I just really love that in this movie, you know, that there were all these different perspectives, you know, and all of them having a lot of very valid points, you know. So I just felt as a person of color, like as a Black person, I didn't feel like, you know, I didn't walk out of the theater thinking like there was one ideology that I was expected to have. And so I hope people caught that, you know.
That, we're not a monolith. Yeah, and even within the movie itself, you could see that T'Challa, the king, he had a council representing people from all the different tribes, you know, and so there were representatives of the different tribes that made up his kingdom, and they all had different perspectives on what should be happening. So that was real, but you make some really good points. And also, you know, I definitely can relate because I think I'm, you know, probably about 10 years older than you. And, you know, I worked at Essence magazine. So you were talking about being a journalist and being, you know, trying to have the responsibility, being aware of everything that you write. And I remember being at Essence and just thinking, hey, everything that we write needs to represent well, needs to, you know, uplift and not denigrate. And I don't know that that's, you know, the journalistic way is to just report the facts, bad, good, or indifferent. And I think that even today's, you know, the TMZ and gossip culture is just like, put it all out there and let us all be like, oh my God, you know, regardless of how it's perceived. So,
yeah, I know we're kind of veering off of movies a little bit, but
yeah, we are.
I mean, I love this. Yeah, I totally agree. And I definitely felt that. And I started at a Black community newspaper. Then I worked at a Black-owned hip-hop publication. So for the first 8 years of my journalistic career. So I definitely, you know, and that stuck with me. So I try to find the balance. But, yeah, I totally feel that way.
Yeah. So since you jumped ahead and mentioned R. Kelly, which is somebody that we've both had to cover over the years, and being entertainment journalists, music journalists, you get a lot of information. You're always chasing a story, and R. Kelly has provided a lot of fodder over the years. And the reason that I bring him up is that I know that people are watching movie events on the small screen and Netflix and TV and cable, and there's so many different outlets in which to see new content and entertainment and things that are marketed as movies. So we may as well talk about this R. Kelly thing, which is, even as we speak, I'm sure it's debuting right now on the Lifetime channel. So
Yes.
it's the first of a three-part documentary called Surviving R. Kelly, and journalist, author, and activist Dream Hampton is the executive producer, and it looks like it's a series of interviews with a lot of victims and some of his quote-unquote girlfriends, a lot of underage girls who experienced all this sexual and emotional abuse at his hands. So I'm interested to see it. It's like prurient interest. Like, I want to see what
Yeah.
happened, but I kind of don't. Like, what are your thoughts
Yeah.
about it?
Wow. Yeah. This is just it's a very weird thing. And I do want to see it. I don't know when I want to see it. I am taping it. And I think I'm not, I think I'm glad that it's done. I'm glad that it's out there. And what I want to say is that I just saw earlier today that Tarana Burke, the woman who started the Me Too movement, on the Me Too movement on their Twitter feed, they have this post that's saying, hey, we want to give consideration that, everyone may not really want to see this, especially survivors. And so they said, here are some tips. They want to share a couple tips for people before they watched it. And just when
Because
I
it's going
read
to be
that, I thought,
triggering.
like, whoa. I thought, yeah, I thought that was really interesting. So I'll just read part of this one, the first tweet, and it says, decide if you can
Cool.
handle it. There will be firsthand accounts of sexual, physical, and emotional abuse that may trigger memories or feelings that you would rather not deal with. Don't feel obligated to. If it feels like too much, don't watch or turn it on. Or turn it on when you want to. And then there's maybe three other tweets, that gives information, and the last one has like a number you can call. And I was looking through some of the responses to the thread, and people were responding to that saying like, yeah, I'm not really sure if I want to see it, or they're having other encouraging words and everything. And so, I know these things, especially as a journalist, I know our we're always to be objective and not cast judgment. I mean, I haven't personally done any of the research and that kind of thing, though I've read a lot of things over the years. I definitely have an opinion, myself, about it, and that's why I'm glad that it's done, because I think, we should hear be able to hear from people who are, alleged survivors, or they should be able to speak about their experiences. And I think in general we all should be able to consider all these things. I mean, because we live in a world where there is a lot of abuse happening every day, and it doesn't seem to be getting worse. I mean, ironically, this month is Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention Month, so I don't think we can do enough, to increase awareness, about these things. So I'm definitely happy that it's done, but I definitely feel like, I think they said there's more than 50 people that have been interviewed, so I imagine like it's going to be pretty, pretty overwhelming to like just hear all these different accounts, from people. And then Dream Hampton, of course we know from all of her great work as a journalist, over the years, and especially in hip hop being so influential, know, especially in the 90s and everything. So, like, to have someone like her behind this, you know, definitely lends a lot of credibility as well. So, and a lot of people are, you know, I've seen a lot of people tweeting about it, like, you know, big celebrities, Tracy Ellis Ross, and I think there's someone else, you know, Gabrielle Union, you know, saying they're going to watch it and things like that. So it's definitely getting a lot of attention.
Well, I think it is important for victims to speak out and speak, you know, truth to power about what occurred. And, you know, because that speaking it makes it, I don't want to say it makes it real, because it is real. Their experiences are real. But I think this culture still has, you know, and that's why the Me Too movement is so important. It still has a blaming the victim sensibility when it comes to sexual abuse and sexual harassment. Like, you know, these young women were sucked in because R. Kelly was a star. And a lot of times young women in abuses situations where things happen, even going back to, you know, celebrities where young women have rape allegations against them and people are outraged. No, this couldn't happen. You just wanted the fame and, you know, you're getting paid under the table to say this and you're getting something out of it. So I think it's really important for people to understand that people who undergo this kind of abuse, women who undergo this kind, they're not asking for this. This is not what they signed on for. You know, it's not fun. They're not, you know, to get payment out of this would have to be some, you know, you'd really have to be mentally deranged, which isn't to say that some people haven't, you know, cried wolf, but I think it's really important for these stories to come forth and people to understand what can happen. One, two, I think that it's going to be eye-opening for a whole segment of people who think, well, yeah, you know, I've heard the stories about R. Kelly, but I still love that song. I like his music. I don't care what anybody
man.
Says.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, so it gets back to the idea of how do you separate the artist from their art? Because, you know, I have been a fan of Woody Allen films. At least his early films were really influential to me, being a New Yorker who came up, you know, in the 70s, in the 80s, and, you know, that kind of Jewish-centered humor was really New York to me and very influential. So do I now disdain those movies because of, you know, the allegations against Woody Allen? Do I never watch his movies again? Do I never enjoy it? So do I never enjoy another R. Kelly song? You know, this becomes, you know, the dilemma, and people will be asking themselves, or at least I hope they will be asking themselves questions once they see this R. Kelly docuseries.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And, you know, I kind of go back and forth with where I stand on, you know, separating the art from the personal
artist.
Life, you know, of the artist. And, you know, for the most part, I felt like I felt like it was separate, because I'm thinking my initial logic was, well, in terms of from a historical standpoint, you know, in terms of music, because there's so many different things, like, should this person be banned from award, being nominated for awards or and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I feel like, you know, when the music, it's, I feel like it's a separate thing, the art, and, you know, these awards are supposed to be based on the best works and this, that, and other. So I feel like, you know, it's skewed if these other factors come into play. But when you consider, you know, I mean, so many people being victimized and, I mean, you know, it doesn't seem morally fair to just ignore that and celebrate, you know, these other, you know, these other things. And I feel like the older I get, you know, I see that there are more and more of these kind of instances, and, you know, even on smaller scales, like, it's crazy. And even just because they're, you know, because that logic that I have had, you know, is kind of awarding them for their fame. But, like, if you or any other field of work, if you're the principal of a school, you know, you can't be on the side, you know, like having allegations like this and continue to just go do your job regardless of how well you're doing,
right,
you're doing your job. And so,
right,
you know, I definitely think it's a lot to consider, and we definitely should not encourage people to, like, you know, to, like, abuse people. I mean, it's horrific, you know, especially children.
Yeah, especially. Well, we'll see what happens. I'm going to check it out and see, you know, if I don't reach, unfortunately, like when you see a lot of those stories, like you might reach like a level where you can't see any more sad, terrible stories.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah,
I wanted to say, too, did you hear, because apparently in there, someone says that they were on tour. I can't remember what role they had. Okay, a background singer said that they had seen R. Kelly and Aaliyah having sex on a tour bus. And apparently this is something that's discussed in the, you know, in the documentary, and it has prompted Aaliyah's mother, who, you know, I feel has been very quiet throughout all these years, to actually
mm-hmm.
release a statement, you know, saying that it was lies, and and she was actually, I'm looking for this quote, she was actually upset and it almost like, I don't know that she was discrediting the whole film. I guess just she didn't feel like Aaliyah should have been brought into any of this. She didn't have anything to do with it. But I just thought that that was pretty crazy because, you know, her family, I feel, is pretty quiet.
Yeah, well, they've been quiet, at, you know, I feel like all these years because there was a marriage certificate. You know, produced to say that the two of them were married at some point. So, I mean, I could understand how upsetting it is to have your daughter's name mentioned in a film about sexual abuse, and but it's also about manipulation and emotional and mental manipulation. And, you know, I'm sure that there were elements of that in R. Kelly being a much older man in his relationship with Aaliyah, who was quite young at that time. But hey, I wasn't there, and neither was mom.
Yep.
So
right.
Yeah, but you know, she's entitled to try to defend the legacy of her daughter. So speaking of legacies,
yeah.
There's also another TV project coming to the small screen, and that is the series on BET called American Soul that's supposed to document the story of the Soul Train TV show and the late Don Cornelius, who passed away in February 2012 of an apparent suicide. And, you know, I've seen some of the previews and seen all the casting announcements, like these breathless casting announcements that, you know, Destiny's Child, Michelle Williams, is going to play Diana Ross,
yeah,
and Kelly Rowland will be Gladys Knight, and Bobby Brown's going to be Rufus Thomas, and, you know, all this stuff. And a guy, I don't know this actor at all, Cinqua Walls, is going to play Don Cornelius. And, you know, you and I both had you know, dealings with Don Cornelius. I think maybe I had more dealings with him than maybe you did. And so it's
mm-hmm.
really, you know, it's a fine line when you do these biopics of having a lead actor cast, because you want somebody who can sort of approximate what they look like and sound like. And it's easier to trick them out and make them look like somebody, you know, but it's harder
right.
if they have a distinctive way of talking, which Don certainly did. He was a prominent broadcaster.
Yes.
Like how this actor makes Don Cornelius sound, and that's already a quibble I have, but maybe that'll go away once I see the film. What do you think?
I'm interested in the story, you know, for sure. I mean, ironically, well, I like biopics in general, and I actually like funerals because I feel like I always learn something about them from the what do they call it? The people who stand up and they share remarks or memories of people. I like hearing those stories, and I always feel like
mm-hmm.
you know, especially if you, even if it's someone I'm close to, you know, I feel like there's always like someone who has something intimate to share, you know, about a person. So I like that. So from that standpoint, I'm interested in it. And I was a huge Soul Train kid. I mean, you know, watched it religiously, you know, through the whole time Don Kinnear's was on it. I remember being in college in the early 90s. And I mean, watching Soul Train every Saturday at 11 o'clock. And I had a running joke, like, if someone called at 11 o'clock on Saturday, I'm like, dude, it's Soul Train is on. Like, don't you know? Like, why are you calling at this time? And so my dealings, I can't say I had any official dealings with Don Kinnear, but I mean, I was in scenarios where he was there and kind of got to see him behind the scenes. And that was interesting, you know, just to kind of see a behind the scenes version of him. So I imagine in watching this series, we'll get a lot more of that. But in terms of the actor who's portraying him, I've only seen the trailers. And, you know, just when I saw them, I don't want to, you know, take anything away from the actor. But especially since I haven't seen the whole piece. And a lot of times with movies, you know, I think we can all agree that they don't always choose the best footage for the trailers. But I wasn't seeing Don Kinnear. I want to get lost in the character.
Right.
You know, I want like a Angela Bassett, Tina Turner moment where, you know, I mean, I was feeling like I was watching Ike and Tina Turner. You know, Angela Bassett and Lawrence Fishburne just did such a great job.
They did. So they really did.
I don't feel like that. But, you know, I was just watching What's Love Got to Do With It was on recently, and there was some behind-the-scenes footage, and it showed, like, Angela and Tina together and, you know, Tina walking her through some of the nuances of, you know, how she moved and her gestures, and Angela Bassett explained how Tina Turner had explained to her why she did some of those things, and I could see how that could help. And clearly this actor, well, I'm assuming he didn't know Don Kinnear, but maybe he did, I don't know, but I'm assuming he didn't have, you know, with Don Kinnear having been gone for so long, since 2012, that he had an opportunity to, you know, to get that firsthand information from them.
But there's so much footage available. If you watch Soul Train, you know, and then the executive producer of the thing is Tony Cornelius, who is Don's son, who looks so much like him and produced the show for so many years. So there's that. But as you say, maybe we should reserve judgment till we've seen it. It's, you know, but it's hard because I interviewed Don like multiple times when I was at Billboard and, you know, went to the Soul Train Awards and went to the Soul Train Award nominations events. And so always got to shake his hand and say hello and ask him questions and stuff like that. So his voice is really strong in my ears, even after all this time. So sometimes, like I mentioned, when we watch these biopics of people that we've known, especially these music artists that we've interviewed and we know the intimate details, sometimes it's hard to see that biopic on the screen when they alter the story or they manipulate the time or, you know, characters are totally missing. So, you know, we're like, you know. But the general public doesn't have that perspective, so
that is funny. Now, I would say, no, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, I was gonna say no. You definitely make a valid point. Like, if you have additional information, background information, and then you see a portrayal, and you're like, no, they missed it. You know, and we could think of a couple other films that have come out in the last couple of years, the Tupac one and the NWA one, and you know, like, there are lots of people who were close to those scenarios that felt like, you know what, something was missing, you know? So, you know, that's a very valid point.
It's never going to be perfect. Okay, we've got about, like, 5.5 minutes left of the show. So I wanted to give you an opportunity, Billy, because I know that you work still in the media and you work on the PR side and you do have a lot of other personal projects that you're interested in. So, and one of them is a film festival, I understand. So can you tell us a little bit about these things that you work on in LA?
Yeah. Thanks for that opportunity. So as I mentioned briefly earlier, like, after being a journalist and the news grind every day and being on call my entire career, You know, I just needed a little shift, so to speak. And so I still do some freelancing, you know, on the side. I mean, actually, Yahoo's had me write a couple of things, and the Grammys.com, I wrote a couple of things for them. And, you know, sometimes I still do TV appearances as a music expert. You know, but I started a media company, a digital PR company called Media and Repertoire. And I do media consulting and PR and mostly independent recording artists, but also have a couple other, you know, clients that are very interesting. I love working with. One is this festival that you mentioned. It's called the Long Beach Indie International Film Festival. It's in Long Beach. It's we just had our fifth year this year. I've been working with them for 2 years, and the CEO, founder, and creator, Dr. Daniel E. Walker, is just an incredibly dynamic person. And this one great thing about this festival is that it's all about the diversity. So the 85% of the works are made and directed, produced by either women or people of color. So, you know, that's just a really big priority for the festival. And a lot of great things have come out of it over the years, which has been incredible. And it's all about educating people about the industry as well, because it includes a conference component. And that's kind of how I initially got involved, is coming in to help produce some panels and workshops. So I definitely love working with them, and also work with Dr. Daniel Walker beyond that, as he does various speaking engagements and so forth. And I also have been working with a domestic violence intervention program, interesting enough, you know, with all the R. Kelly conversation. And it's called the Genesee Center. And they're based in Los Angeles and have been serving South Los Angeles for the last 38 years. They're the longest, the organization that has been serving the South LA for the longest. And Halle Berry, ironically, has been a spokesperson for the organization for 19 years. So I don't do PR for them. They already have a publicist, but they have a youth division called Generation J that goes into the schools and educates kids about healthy relationships. And so I'm primarily working with them, doing social media for them. And they also just did a wonderful talent competition where teenagers age 13 to 18 competed, and they had to perform a song with an empowering message. So it started off as an online search. So I was very helpful with that, and I was able to help secure the Grammy Museum, you know, as the place where the finale was held, and like all the kids were incredible. And it was actually very inspiring to like to see how many kids, you know, when given the task to, you know, cover a song with an empowering message, were, you know, responding, you know, happily to do it. Like, even, you know, we listen to all this stuff on the radio and all these people are popular and all these songs are whatever, but these kids, you know, like they chose these great songs. And the young lady who won, who's 16, she won singing Nina Simone's Feeling Good, and she started off a cappella and then played the rest on piano, and was just, you know, I'll send you a clip, just got chills. And so they're their social media handle is Generation J, and it's spelled with the J, so JENERATIONJ. And absolutely love working with them, and I'm going to continue working with them. And so yeah, I'm pretty, you know, I'm definitely pretty blessed to, you know, be able to reinvent myself, you know, still do as much of the journalism stuff that, you know, that I want to do, but be able to spread my wings and try some other things as well. And it's been great.
That is awesome. I really love the Genesee Center and what they're doing, because it's so needed. And the Long Beach Indie International Film Festival, is that what it is? When does that happen usually? What month?
Oh yeah. Thanks for asking. So it's Labor Day weekend. So I know that's kind of a tough weekend because people are out of town, but it also turns out to be a destination, you know, for people as well, and really, you know, really, really amazing.
Awesome. Well, Billy, this has been a really fun conversation. I'm so glad that you said yes to me when I reached out to you. It's been awesome having you on. Thank you so much. And hopefully maybe you'll make time to come back on the show in the future for Words on Flicks show. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, the time has gone by fast, and I miss talking to you in the office every day. So, you know, it was good catching up. And hopefully, you know, everyone, you know, had a good time. As much fun we had. So, yeah, thank you again. I really appreciate it.
I think so. All right, everybody. That's the Words on Flick show, the first show of the new year with Mr. Billy Johnson Jr. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you again next week right here. Thanks again, and Happy New Year, y'all.